Good morning. We are here on New Mexicans for Utility Safety versus New Mexico Public Regulation Commission, S1SC40723. Council, if you'd enter your appearance, and you can begin your argument.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, and good morning to all of you. It's an honor.
Before you begin, let me confirm. You've reserved 10 minutes.
I reserved 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm Deanne McBride on behalf of the Mexicans of Utility Safety. It's nice to see all of you. Kind of a nice surprise for me. And it's an honor to appear today, and may it please the court. I think with all the issues that are raised in all the briefs, the big question before the court today is, does the Grid Modernization Act forbid the PRC's reasonable review from considering health, safety, and welfare of a major electric utility implementation? My client says it does not, and we ask that you must reverse. The commission had to consider at least seven factors, one of which was the reduction of air pollution. The commission never weighed my client's evidence against that factor, but decided that the entire subject was outside of the proceeding before any evidence was admitted. And after the hearing examiner had admitted the factors that in the Grid Modernization Act were themselves non-exhaustive. So we asked the court to hold that the reasonableness review cannot be defined to exclude the one thing that my clients came to court to say. Ideas proposed by PNM and the PRC lead us to an absurd conclusion. It says that the legislature intended to exempt health, safety, and welfare from consideration in any large-scale electric utility implementation unless it specifically directed the PRC to consider that idea. Now, as a matter of policy, the Public Utility Act, on a broader scale, raises health, safety, and welfare as an important consideration. So whether the legislature needs to specifically go through every single statute and that implements a program and say, oh, in this one, we really mean it. I think that's a heavy lift for the legislature when it has already made a statement of policy that includes health, safety, and welfare.
But didn't the legislature also make a state policy statement in its legislation that it includes this particular technology expressly in its statute?
It does say it includes this technology expressly in the statute. That's exactly true. But it didn't approve the project, right? It gave it to the PRC for a reasonable review. So, again, the PRC, as it says in its answers, it has special expertise to be able to assess these kinds of issues. The legislature doesn't have that expertise. So perhaps the legislature, through its process of hearing from constituents or hearing from lobbyists or hearing from whomever they might have heard from, felt that this technology was safe. But that doesn't mean we've had a full exploration of the technology. If the technology included some sort of a feature that just every once in a while shot a fireball at somebody, but the enabling statute didn't say, please make sure that we're checking for fireballs, you know, wouldn't it be consistent with the Constitution and with the Public Utility Act to have a contemplation of health, safety, and welfare? I think it would be consistent, and if not, then what's to stop the PRC from approving anything only on economic principles and not on community-based principles, not on community concerns, and not on whether New Mexicans expect to have a negative health and safety outcome.
So how do you measure that? How would the PRC measure public health, safety, and welfare? Say we had 10 witnesses on one side and 10 on the other, so it's an even thing?
Sure. I think this is where we get into that special expertise and into that discretion. And they could have done that. They could have said, I wonder how we're going to measure health, safety, and welfare. I wonder what that's going to look like. But they didn't do it. They said, we are forbidden by this statute from even talking about it. An analogy I've been kicking around in my head.
But let's assume arguendo that they've gone that way.
Yeah.
How is it possible? How do you measure that?
I think we have
one
cases.
One person says, you know, I think it does this to me. These waves or whatever they are, it does this to my brain. Somebody else says, no, it doesn't. So what does the PRC or the hearing officer do with it?
Well, I think we're putting ourselves in a moment, Mr. Senior Justice, that is ahead of the problem that they didn't even consider the question. So I appreciate what you're asking. But I'm not an expert in that.
You're asking us to order that they do.
No, I'm asking you to order that they allow my client to make an argument. I'm not asking you to say that my client's evidence, I'm not bringing you any evidence today. I'm not asking you to say my client's evidence is locked down. This stuff is terrible for you. I can't say that to you. It's not the nature of what we're doing today. I am asking you to tell the PRC they have to at least listen to it.
Didn't that happen in 2015? Your client intervened in the 2015 proceedings to raise the kind of health, safety, welfare concerns. The proffered testimony and exhibits were admitted into the record and considered by the hearing officer the hearing examiner, and the examiner said, I can't reach the conclusion that your client wants, that it is creates an unacceptable risk. Didn't that answer the question in 2015? And where was the appeal from that decision making?
Sure, sure. Well, I think definitely it probably answered the question in 2015, but things changed in lots of ways. I think in 2015, the AMI technology was not approved, right? And also in 2015, the PRC said, we have jurisdiction to consider this issue, and we're going to consider it, and we don't think what you have to say is good enough, right? Now, the PRC says that the issues that considering health and safety and welfare, they were fixed by the legislature in the 2020 modification to the Grid Modernization Act. But they also say, the hearing examiner says himself, the Grid Modernization Act doesn't use the word health or environment. So I don't know how that fixes a concern of health, safety, and welfare. That popped up in 2015. Also in 2015, PNM said, we really don't, we want to be mindful about not submitting too much of a proposal because we're not sure if you're going to even allow us to go forward with this. That's different from 2020 when the PRC and PNM felt like, okay, now we have a program. We have seven possible factors, seven kinds of things we can consider. And so now we're ready to go forward. Let's make this a big deal. So I think it's a different environment. And I don't think it changes the concerns of the appellants. In particular, now they have a more specific and different project to weigh their concerns against.
Do we have a separation of powers problem? Legislature approves the use of AMI, and if the PRC were to say, nope, you can't use AMI, doesn't that create a tension between the executive branch and the legislative branch that's problematic?
The legislative branch said AMI is an approved technology against which an application may be submitted and a review may be conducted. The legislature did not say, let's go AMI. That's not what they said. And so I don't think it creates that kind of a conflict. And insofar as the conflict exists, it is created by the hearing examiner who elected to make a subject matter jurisdiction call that was not his to make. Is to say, I am forbidden. I mean, forbidden. I think that leads us to, again, this incredible, rather absurd possibility that if you affirm this decision, the PRC might not have to allow any interveners in who want to talk about health, safety, and welfare, right? Because it's off the table. The commission has already said, we don't have to talk about this unless it's particularly mentioned in an enabling statute. We don't have to talk about it. And so the record is full. And so whatever you may think of my clients or their claims or their issues or whatnot, I think you have to see them in the place of anyone who might have a different concern about health, safety, and welfare. And will the door be closed to them to raise that issue simply because some statute within the Public Utility Act fails to specifically require health, safety, and welfare. I just don't think as a matter of public policy that's an outcome we can live with. And I don't think it's a thing we can ask the legislature to do, to either go back and expect no pushback from any interest whatsoever and modify every statute within the Public Utility Act, you know, nor do I think it's an acceptable outcome to just presume that we can do a $344 million installation without considering health, safety, and welfare.
Mr. McBride, do you view the legislation as directing grid modernization?
I view the legislation as directing grid modernization.
Okay.
I do not view it as directing AMI.
So it does direct grid modernization, and then, in your view, the things that are listed is grid modernization, including, in the very first instance, AMI. Those are suggestions that can be considered by the PRC under a reasonableness review protocol. And maybe of the six that are listed, in your view, the PRC, after hearing from your clients, could conclude that, hey, options B through E are fine, but option A is not. Do you see the legislation as proceeding that way?
I would agree, Judge Hennessy, that the legislation says here are some ways that grid modernization could happen. If a utility applies to do so, you may conduct a reasonable review. The issue, of course, the ambiguity that's introduced in this legislation is the word reasonableness. That's never clearly defined. But I think when we have such an ambiguity by statutory construction, we have to look up to policy.
But it's not just the first example or suggestion that speaks to AMI. Others relate to AMI, such as interconnection of distributed resources. Well, that seems to suggest a technology that uses some sort of signal that your clients complain of. And then another is security against cyber threats, which would again suggest that the modernization is going to involve communication other than in the previous physical way, which is reading meters and writing down or somehow recording what those meters say. So if you look to it, it's not just that the first factor goes to AMI, it's just the thrust of grid modernization appears to be that which it nationally is, which includes AMI.
Well, of that list, long ago, many years ago in the Air Force, I built a computer by hand, right? So my knowledge of computers is way back in punch cards and soldering irons, right? But on that list, AMI really requires radio frequency and cellular technology. You can have a network, a very secure network, that does not use radio frequency. You can have all kinds of connections. You can have record keeping. Is it more convenient to be able to zap, 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 zap? Yeah, much more convenient. But AMI specifically requires transmission through the air of some sort of a disruption.
Are you aware of any place that has excluded AMI? And I recall when cell towers first came to Santa Fe, sitting on a case that involved complaints about the cell towers. Hard to stop that sort of progress, of course, but I remember the similar such complaints then. I'm wondering if it seems that AMI in this context is becoming the prevalent tool to communicate usage to the utility. Are you aware of any place that excludes it on this or really any ground?
Yeah, no, I'm not aware of any place that excludes it, but I also think that's not what we're here to ask you about. Right, we're not here to say, I'm not taking a poll on the benefits of cellular technology. You know, I love my cell phone. I use my cell phone. Right, I presume some of you have one too.
I love hate mine.
That's right. Okay, that's right. I get a lot of value of hating my cell phone as well. But that's not the thing. The thing is, does an intervener, does a party, have a right to raise? In this case, you said it could be this, could be that, this could specifically raise the question of air pollution, never have it addressed. It is not addressed in the final order. The only thing that's addressed in the final order is a discussion about my client's suggestion that the utility may apply, and the commission kind of goes into the hearing examiner and the commission go into sort of a thing like, well, may doesn't mean, we understand may means may, but in this case, it probably means shall, blah, blah, blah. So, but they never address the fact that my client raised air pollution which
isn't their silence just a rejection of the argument? I mean, I sitting as a in the trial court posture and having written
right.
hundreds, if not thousands, of findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Right.
You know, perfection is not the task, and is the silence the rejection of the argument, and is that a fair interpretation?
I think if a party does nothing else after that, then they have accepted the silence as a rejection of their premise, but that's not what these parties have done. They've asked you to hear this question again. And again, it is not an up and down vote on cellular technology. It is an up and down vote on whether a party in a case has a right to raise an issue relevant to the enabling statute
they did raise
the basis
it.
Of policy.
They did raise it. And the hearing officer heard it
okay.
and determined it wasn't relevant. And to Justice Bacon's point, that happens a lot at the district court level. So how did they consider it and dispose of it? And that's your due process.
They considered it... They considered it only as argument, right? They never entertained any evidence. Certainly there was pre-hearing work, but that's not evidence. That's not admitted. Certainly my client participated in some cross-examination, but that's not direct examination. It's limited by the scope of the questions that were asked before. So, you know, I think
did
Justice
Thompson...
Did your
client call any witnesses?
Pardon?
Did your client call any witnesses?
My client attempted to call witnesses. He participated in cross-examination of one witness. I don't believe he was able to call any witnesses. You know, in the 2015 case, though, Justice Bacon, they did have three experts certified to participate in that action. So, you know, again, I think it's a serious question.
Didn't the hearing officer then suggest some action be taken to find ways to mitigate or to protect sensitive members of the public that do suffer from symptoms from technology like that? I seem to recall the hearing officer suggesting that that be looked into. Did anything ever come of that, to your knowledge?
Well, there was a big discussion. There's an outcome based on an opt-out provision, right? Were we able to opt out? It was originally set at $30 a month, and the price dropped to $9 a month. And my client was on the record like, that's not our issue. Like, we didn't intervene to discuss opt-out with you. We intervened to talk about the health and safety and welfare created by this technology. That the legislature has approved for review, you know, for a reasonable review. And so I think much hay has been made in the answer briefs about, you know, his kind of refusal to participate after a point he'd kind of given up, I think, on just asking to be heard. I think it was fair for him to say, if I participate in the opt-out conversation, then I'm conceding that there is a point, an engineering point that might require special expertise to answer. There is a point at which these RF technologies are no longer harmful. And I'm not willing to concede that point because I'm here to discuss the health, safety, and welfare of this technology, right? And so I think that it isn't a pleasant record to read, but I think it's a sensible one.
So would you educate me on the nature of your client's due process interests? I'm having trouble understanding.
Sure. Well, our proposition is that he asked to, you know, he filed motions, he came forward, he asked to have the issue of air pollution heard on the merits. And he was denied any hearing on the merits. He was denied a chance to have witnesses testify, call experts, produce documentary on that issue, right? And so, and the cause of it was not, I think this word relevance is really tricky in this case, and I'm keeping out of my time, but it was not whether the testimony of the witnesses was really relevant to the question of air pollution or health, safety, and welfare. It was that the hearing officer had decided the issue of health, safety, and welfare was irrelevant to the Grid Modernization Act.
So you have a due process right to present evidence on health, safety, and welfare. Is that your argument?
That's right. We have a due process right to present evidence on health, safety, and welfare.
Even though the statute's silent.
Even though the statute is silent, well, except that the act allows us to talk about air pollution. So is it silent if it's allowing us to talk about that issue? I don't think it's silent. It may be silent on the words health, and I think also environment it's also silent on. But I would just say in my last few seconds, I think it's an absurd idea that the Public Regulatory Commission would be able to approve a multi-million dollar expenditure of funds without being expected to at least consider evidence of health, safety, and welfare.
Thank you, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Madam.
Ms. LeCocq, I see that you have reserved 23 minutes. Mr. Verhill, 7, is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may enter your appearance and begin.
Thank you. Good morning, Erin LeCocq, on behalf of the New Mexico Public Regulation Commission. Madam Chief Justice, Justices, good morning, and may it please the Court. The Commission is not arguing that safety can never be considered in a grid modernization application. The Commission's position here is narrower, and it is that a party cannot use a utilities grid modernization application as a way to relitigate the legislature's decision that AMI is a permissible grid modernization technology. So I have 3 points to make in response to appellant's argument. First, the excluded testimony was not directed at anything that was uniquely unsafe about PNM's proposed project. It was offered to establish that AMI itself could not be deployed, and that is a policy question that the legislature had established.
Under what language of the statute? So is it your argument that the legislature expressed that AMI is not included in the umbrella of public health, safety, and welfare? Or that I understand your argument, well, tell me if I'm wrong, that AMI is permissible for the grid improvement. But is it also your argument that they carved out AMI from the consideration of 3282?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Yes. So Section 328 actually is, the statute is really not applicable here. Okay. We really have to look at the grid modernization statute itself. And the grid modernization statute says that when considering applications for approval, the Commission shall review the reasonableness of a proposed grid modernization project, and as part of that review shall consider whether the investments, expenditures, et cetera, and then provide 7 factors that the Commission must consider. But more importantly, in that statute, it says, as used in this section, grid modernization means improvements to electric distribution, et cetera, and includes advanced metering infrastructure. So the legislature, by including that language in this statute, has said grid modernization includes AMI. So this now becomes a question of relevance. Was the evidence that was being offered to prove a generalized attack on the use of AMI in New Mexico as a whole, or was it specific to a specific application, which is what the legislature has said, that the Commission must consider? And so that brings me to my second point, is that this exclusion did not come without a warning. The hearing examiner set the scope of this proceeding and identified the question that was before the Commission several times. And most importantly, in the initial order to intervene, he said that NMUS will be permitted to intervene subject to certain conditions and should be permitted to participate in this proceeding at the very least to ensure its members are heard about opt-out provisions. And then he continues to say that any evidence that speaks to generalized use of AMI is irrelevant because it's essentially a collateral attack on what the legislature has already established.
Did the hearing officer rule that health safety considerations are not part of the commissioner's findings or the commission's findings?
He determined at the outset in the order granting intervention, he said, in this particular case, the commission is choosing not to examine health, safety, and welfare of all use of AMI. all use of AMI, because that, as Justice Bacon pointed out, that is the provision of the legislature. If the appellants wanted to attack all use of AMI, there are other avenues to do that. But this was not the vehicle. This was not the proceeding for that. And the hearing examiner established that at the outset. So that brings me to my third point, which is the due process question. The due process question, if this is a relevancy determination, the due process question is answered. The hearing examiner set out the scope of the proceeding. That was the notice. He did that in the order granting intervention, and then he did that in 8 additional orders. He said specifically, I hear that you want to discuss the health and safety of AMI in general, how it goes to air pollution, or how in the generalized use of AMI is something that we should look at. But that this proceeding is not that proceeding.
But if this proceeding isn't that proceeding, when is that proceeding? Because as I understand Mr. McBride's agreement that this statute directs grid modernization, but although it lists known aspects of what grid modernization might be, his point is that those known aspects are to be considered in the normal course by which a process is reviewed. The legislature mentioned them for good reason because they're the standard in many places. But if this hearing isn't the hearing in which those concerns by his clients can be raised, I just wonder, when would that hearing be? Now, you could say there have been past hearings where they're raised, but this is the penultimate hearing because now there's a statute that directs it and there's funds that are going to pay for it and utilities are going to be able to recover reasonable funds. This is sort of it.
There are other statutes that the appellant could have sought a commission, I guess, review of the safety of PNM-specific meters. Section 62.624 is the general safety authority of the meters that and the technology that PNM uses. It would have been possible for appellant to seek a commission, to file a complaint with the commission under this statute that these meters are dangerous and here's all the evidence about why. That would have been a permissible path. The other path, there are ways to file complaints with the commission that don't implicate that statute. If the appellant was concerned about AMI use in general, that was a policy decision by the legislature. The appellant has the opportunity to go to the legislature and seek a revision of that particular statute. But the question here before the commission was just much, much narrower. It was not a referendum on AMI as a whole, as a technology as a whole. It was only the reasonableness of PNM's application as defined by these 7 factors that the legislature determined that the commission needed to review.
Mr. McBride argues, as I see it, and you can counter it, that that's a fine definition of their position, but it would end up in a ruling that we would prohibit individuals from addressing health safety issues in these kind of proceedings.
Well,
is that true?
I think I want to be very careful about the context of that particular ruling, because what the hearing examiner was saying is that the type of evidence that is being offered, and that this is in the record, there's 2,000 some pages of this evidence in the record proper, that particular evidence, which the hearing examiner looked at, was not going to help the commission answer the question. That health and safety about generalized AMI was not going to assist the commission with the question that was before it, which was evaluating this particular application. And so
divorcing the contents of the application from any consideration of health safety, whether it's AMI or something else. And that seems to kind of do short shrift to the general process for the hearing examiner's review in any case, much less these cases. And that's troubling to me.
Well, and it isn't, Justice Bacon, it is not a general. What the hearing examiner did not say is that the commission can never consider health and safety in these particular applications.
But it's only going to be in front of them based on an application.
Well,
I mean, that is the vehicle to be in front of a hearing examiner's apply and say, we want to do X. And then the hearing examiner has to review what does X entail and make a decision. And what you're arguing, it seems to me, is that we're taking that health, safety, welfare, whatever, just using that as shorthand, mm-hmm. out of that process. And that seems inconsistent with the general rules that apply to the PRC.
So, Justice Bacon, to answer your question, I'm gonna back up just a little bit, because if we look at the evidence, the question is really, the question that was before the hearing examiner is, what is this evidence being offered to prove? If there was evidence in the record that showed that there was a particular issue with one of PNM's, one of the ways that PNM was choosing to implement its grid modernization program, if that was a concern of health and safety, this particular model throws fireballs at people, as Mr. McBride said. That would have been relevant in this case. That would have gone directly to PNM's application. What the hearing examiner determined ultimately is that the evidence that was being proffered was only about, it was a referendum on AMI as a whole. And he, in his discretion, made the determination that that was a question for the legislature, and a question before the commission was only this application.
So you made the comment about a proffer. Mm-hmm. Was a formal proffer made at this hearing?
So the way,
as to what the evidence would be and what it would show?
It's a little complicated, Justice Vigil, in commission proceedings, as I know you know. and the way that they work is the testimony, the proposed testimony and proposed exhibits are offered ahead of time, and they're put in what we call the record in our docketing system. And then from there, the hearing examiner, the parties, whoever can examine that, and then that evidence is adopted in the actual hearing. So the hearing examiner was able to look at that evidence. He could see what was being proffered. It's there. It's in the record. But it didn't make it into the evidentiary record that the hearing examiner was able to consider.
So we know what the proffer was.
Yes.
Ms. LeCocq, kind of getting back to your discussion about the nature of the evidence was not appropriate. Mm-hmm. If they had come with evidence that was something like an AMI unit that was less than 25 feet from where someone sleeps, that's unsafe. Would that have been evidence that would be appropriate for this hearing?
I don't think so, Chief Justice.
Why not?
Because that really is the, it goes to AMI as a whole. AMI as a whole, any AMI meter would be unsafe if it were 25 meters from where someone sleeps. If there were evidence that this particular meter in this application that PNM was providing.
Well, let's assume that that's what the evidence was. That what PNM is planning, mm-hmm. if it's installed 25 feet from someone's bedroom, that's harmful. Would that have been acceptable evidence?
I think that could have been something the hearing examiner would have permitted.
So a particular brand or model that's more specific than just AMI generally.
Yes. And because the hearing examiner drew that distinction between what the legislature said in the statute, that the commission's job was to evaluate the reasonableness of a particular grid modernization project. That is the bucket that the hearing examiner was using to consider the evidence.
And there was nothing, to your mind, and I'll ask Mr. McBride to counter this, there was nothing in what was presented by the petitioner here that was specific in that regard, that widget X was dangerous in terms of its placement or anything else. It was really just AMI, very broadly, bad.
That's correct, Justice Bacon. So the hearing examiner, when he looked at the evidence, he determined this evidence is not helping us determine whether this application should be approved. It is a generalized attack on the legislature's policy decision that AMI is a permissible use of technology in grid modernization programs.
So to draw to an analogy that I would understand, if it was in San Miguel and PNM said, I'm going to put up a transformer that sparks fires, someone would have the ability to object to that form of transformer or wire.
Yes.
But they couldn't necessarily say transformers overall are banned because they're unsafe. Is that right?
That's correct, Justice Thompson. Because if the legislature said, as part of implementing our transmission lines, we're going to include transformers as part of that.
I got to tell you, that doesn't make me feel real good. I mean, I'm struggling a little bit with the legislature deciding what is, I kind of think that's in the realm of the PRC, quite frankly, but so I am struggling a little bit with that argument that legislature can put down in statute, once we say this is permissible, there's no review of it, but.
But, and Your Honor, I am going to push back just a little bit because it is permissible. It's just not in this proceeding. There are, if you, to use your example, if there were evidence that this particular transformer sparked fires, that's that statute about the PNM require, that requires PNM to have its technology be safe and meet certain standards, et cetera. That's the statute. That's the avenue to attack that particular issue. So it can come before the commission, just not here.
So in terms that I could understand, it's per se versus as applied.
Yes, I think that would be.
Is that
yes,
a reasonable distinction?
Yes, yes, yes. And I want to push back also just a little bit on this idea that about just the due process question in general. Due process, as we all know, requires notice of issues to be heard. Those are the questions. It's very similar to this court when they adopt a petition for cert saying, we will grant cert on these specific issues, but not these issues. That does not give, just because the attorney or just because the party would like all of these issues heard, that doesn't give them the right to litigate the issues that the court has not granted cert on. It's similar here, where the hearing examiner set out in the notice, in the order granting intervention. And I understand Mr. McBride's argument that that is not the purpose for which they intervened, but the purpose for which they were permitted to intervene, according to the hearing examiner, was you can talk, he gave them a path. You can discuss opt-out provisions. You can discuss what it would mean for you to not participate in this proceeding. But appellant chose not to go down that path and instead continued to litigate AMI being dangerous as a whole. And the hearing examiner set out that notice and in the initial order to intervene, and then I think in eight additional orders. So the notice of the question that was before the commission was provided to the appellant, and then opportunities to be heard on that specific question were provided over and over and over again. So appellant had multiple opportunities to present evidence to the question that was before the commission as defined by the hearing examiner. So the question, I think, just to wrap this up, the question in the proceeding was whether PNM's proposed grid modernization project met the statutory requirements for approval. Appellant wanted to litigate a different question, which is whether AMI could be implemented at all. And that question had already been answered by the legislature, that it was a permissible use of technology as part of grid modernization projects. The hearing examiner ultimately told that distinction to appellant repeatedly, and again, several different orders, reviewed the evidence it ultimately offered and made the determination that the evidence simply was not relevant to the question that was before the commission. So this really becomes a question of relevance. And then once that relevance question is answered, the due process question is also answered, that the appellant was provided notice of the question before the commission, multiple opportunities to answer the question for which it was permitted to intervene, and appellant did not take that opportunity. So on this record, excluding the evidence was a relevance ruling, not a denial of due process. And unless the court has any other questions.
Thank you.
Then we respectfully request that the court affirm the commission. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. John Verhuell on behalf of Public Service Company of New Mexico.
You may begin.
Thank you. Justices, I want to talk first about the meter safety rule and how it applies to this case. Then I want to talk about the recourse that NMUS had during the course of the proceeding in question. And then I'll just wrap up. First, with respect to the meter safety rule, Section 62.624, this is obviously in the Public Utility Act, safety rules and regulations. This provides the commission with the authority to promulgate rules to protect customers from defective or dangerous electrical equipment. The commission has done that. There is a meter safety rule. It is at 17.9.560.14 NMAC. It already requires PNM to only utilize safe meters. That rule was most recently amended in 2020, which is well after the inception of AMI meters nationally and internationally.
Safe by whose definition?
I'm sorry?
Safe by whose definition?
The meter safety rule itself requires all the equipment that utilities use to pass certain standards and certain tests. In this case, the National Electrical Safety Code, also the American National Standards Institute. It requires every single piece of equipment that the utility implements pass those regulations and pass those codes to meet those.
Is there an opportunity for objection to what is deemed to be safe? So PRC looks at, you know, these things, and then looks at these things, and they say, well, we think this is safe because these organizations have declared them to be safe. Is there opportunity to object before that becomes formalized?
Yes, Your Honor, there is. There's a couple ways you can do it. In this particular case, NMUS could have come and said, oh, these ITRON meters that PNM is proposing, they don't meet these standards.
Counselor, I'm not an engineer, but if I'm understanding what you're saying, these standards relate to the electrical safety of these meters. And they don't relate to whether or not the beams that are projected out, how they communicate to each other, are or are not safe to consumers. It relates to the transmitter itself and whether or not it's electrically safe. Am I right or wrong?
You're partially right, Your Honor. The National Electrical Safety Code pertains to the electrical functioning of the meters. However, these meters also pass the Federal Communication Commission standards for communication devices.
Okay, and ASI similarly is?
ANSI, ANSI, yes.
That's also the electrical components.
I believe ANSI considers more than simply the electrical functionality.
Okay.
And then going back to my question, yes. Is there an opportunity for an entity like the petitioner to object and put evidence before somebody to say, this is not correct and here is why?
Yes, several ways. They could have said that they don't meet these standards in this particular proceeding. They were offered that opportunity. You can say these meters aren't safe because they don't meet the standards that they're required to per rule. They could have filed a petition for rulemaking to amend the meter safety rule to require the commission to look into the alleged health effects of these AMI meters and say you can't use them at all anywhere.
But isn't that contrary then to PRC's position, or at least the hearing examiner's position of, I'm not allowed to touch any of this because the legislature has said AMI is hunky-dory?
No, Your Honor, it's not contrary. What the hearing examiner said was, this question isn't relevant in this particular proceeding where we're deciding the reasonableness of PNM's application to implement AMI meters.
I don't think you followed my question from the statement that you made. You said that they could file a petition for rulemaking to say AMI is bad, but isn't that contrary to what happened on the ground in this case where the hearing examiner said we can't consider generalized attacks on AMI because the legislature is blessed in generalized use of AMI? Not specific to this case, but given that you said they could have filed a petition for rulemaking to achieve that goal of AMI is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm not sure that's at odds, Your Honor.
Except the legislature has said, AMI is fine, go forth and use.
Mm-hmm.
And you're suggesting that a petition for rulemaking where the ultimate outcome could be AMI is bad, those two things are at odds with each other.
Again, Justice Bacon, the hearing examiner only said, I can't consider
not
that.
In this case, generally speaking, because you're saying
mm-hmm.
there was this offering
mm-hmm.
for the petitioners here that they could have filed a petition for rulemaking trying to achieve the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Assume with me that was done. And the hearing examiner said, you know, you're right. AMI is dangerous. Isn't that then creating a conflict with what the legislature said about using AMI?
There may be a conflict there, Your Honor.
So I'm not sure that's really an available off-ramp.
I don't think in a petition for rulemaking that, well, first of all, they don't utilize hearing examiners for rulemakings, but I don't think that the commission would have rejected that outright.
I don't think we're speaking the same language. Carry on.
I apologize. I see I only have a minute left, so I'll just wrap up quickly. Because Section 628.13 expressly authorizes utilities to seek approval of grid modernization projects that include AMI, and because the Commission has the authority to decide what is relevant in such a proceeding, the Commission here correctly interpreted the law, declined to hear evidence that wasn't relevant to the application before them, and approved PNM's proposal. For all those reasons, PNM respectfully requests the Court affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So several things I'd like to just discuss. One is, so many times it's come up. I mean, we just heard from PNM, I'll start there, that there were all these options, that the evidence didn't meet the standards, you know, that, or that there was a standard that could have been met, and that the implementation met the standard. But that testimony was excluded, so it's not in the record. The testimony that the implementation met the FCC standard was excluded testimony. So in this case, I think being really clear, what was happening? It was in the proffer, but I believe it was in the proffer. It might have been in actual something said in court, but it was not. It was redacted. All PNM's testimony related to health, safety, and welfare. Parts of it were admitted, and lots of it was redacted. And so this testimony by Mr. Hawkins was redacted. And so as you're weighing this entire case, keeping clear what is, you know, I had a case as a judge once when I said, look, my job here today is to put messy things back into little boxes. And there is a before box, and there is a during box, and there's an after box. And a lot of things happened in this case in the before box. But they didn't get to happen in the during box. And so I think all of these things, rulemaking, what I think is interesting about that, I think you've pointed out the potential conflict with that, but that would be the PRC as taking responsibility for making a rule to address the thing that it's saying in this case it cannot address because it doesn't have subject matter jurisdiction. I just don't see how.
But we come back to the per se versus as applied. It would seem to me that, and correct me if I'm wrong, the legislature could say we're going to allow MRI. Mm-hmm. But in a particular case, as applied, it's not going to be approved because it's dangerous or it's unsafe.
Yeah. Well.
So
I'm sorry.
Why doesn't that answer your argument?
Well,
your client could come in and say this is unsafe for these reasons.
Uh huh. Well, you know, I think the presentation by PRC makes it sound as if we are. We're at the AMI supermarket, and we're just shopping from lots and lots of different versions of AMI, but there is one AMI. And that AMI project was not before the legislature. So yes, the legislature approved the technology in principle, but the legislature did not conduct the specialized inquiry.
So your proffers demonstrate that you filed pre-hearing, demonstrate that this plan is unsafe for the people of New Mexico, or the consumers of this product.
Well, I think our proffers speak to the claim by my clients that this technology has some inherent lack of safety.
But you're saying in general,
right?
The per se, but as applied, there's nothing there.
That would ask my clients to, again, to have come up with an acceptable level of implementation.
Your clients are objecting blanket to all AMI.
Yeah, but there is no other AMI, Senior Justice.
Different uses of AMI. AMI in the middle of New Mexico where there's not a single person. In Harding County, there's 500 people.
Yeah.
If it's out in the middle of Harding County, not near anyone, just a bunch of cows, is it still a health and safety issue as opposed to when it's 30 feet from my bedroom where I sleep eight hours a night? Is that the difference we're talking about, or is all AMI
Well, I think
impermissible?
My I think it's been very clear. My client's position is AMI is a harmful technology.
All
whether it's 25 feet from your bedroom or only operated when the Alsips is closed 50 miles down the road.
But the legislature disagrees. They think at least there are some applications of AMI that are appropriate.
Okay.
Maybe not. I don't know if this project is, but they seem to think that there are some applications where AMI is appropriate.
And I think there's no way around that. However, the legislature did not have this application before it. The legislature did not have this proposal before it. And if my clients can create a nexus, with the enabling statute, which it did with air pollution, to say we have a concern about this application. Now, this application is a stand-in for all applications in the universe, but they can say, we have a nexus with the enabling statute that raises a concern about this deployment of this technology. You should hear us out about it. And what happened here, though, I think is that, and I don't want to interrupt, I'm sorry, I have another
question. But it sounds like Ms. LeCocq's concern is that the evidence that was proffered does not address this particular project. It doesn't say what PNM is suggesting here, putting these things in these places, that's what's unsafe and damages people, is a concern for people's health and safety. That the testimony and the evidence that was proffered was AMI is always dangerous everywhere, no matter where it is, no matter how far it is from people. That's what I understand from her argument. So how do you address that argument? What in the record is directed particularly at this project to show that this project creates a health and safety concern?
Off the top of my head, I cannot come up with a place in the record that does that work. But I think that insofar as, we believe that the hearing officer made a mistake, and that mistake was early on, right? And so for the PRC to just keep coming back and reinforcing the mistake, if I tell you I'm going to drive to Albuquerque after I leave court and I head north and I keep heading north and we just keep justifying why I made a great decision to head north, it doesn't make it less more right or less wrong. So I think the hearing officer limited his subject matter jurisdiction. Now, I hear what you're saying. The legislature approved the technology. But the legislature approved the technology without the special expertise that would be required to review.
This is where we have a constitutional problem because, again, going to transformer, if the legislature said transformers are fine, it seems to me you're arguing is an individual or a group could come into the PRC, overrule that decision through this hearing officer process. PRC could come to a conclusion that does exactly the opposite of what the legislature expressed in the statute. That's a problem. If you're going to take a general attack on this technology that defeats the words of a legislature and grant that authority in the PRC, that's a structural problem, is it not?
Well, it is only I think it's a structural problem insofar as this application it stands for all applications of AMI. But in the context of this case, this is an objection to this application. Right now, maybe the rationale for the objection of this application is all AMI is bad, and perhaps that I can see the conflict that you're pointing toward. But I think the legislature also resolved the conflict by reminding us that there is an overriding statement of policy, which is that we care about health, safety, and welfare. To reject that premise, again, whatever you may think of my client's claims and whatever you may think of cellular technology, never mind that. To accept the premise that we can have $450 million project that at the day we got in the car, we drove north. The day we got in the car, we drove north, and that's what we're going to do. And to accept that premise, I think, is an absurd conclusion. I think it's a matter of policy. You know, however you get there, you know, however you can get there, however I can help you get there, I would love to, because I don't think, whatever happens to NMUS, that that is a good position for our state to be in when it comes to health, safety, and welfare and major electrical utility installations. Is there anything else?
Any questions?
Well, it has been lovely to see you all today. Thank you for your time. And we ask that the court return the matter back to the PRC for a new trial, or in the alternative, for a limited hearing on the question of air pollution and my client's evidence on that issue.
Thank you.
I want to thank counsel for their very helpful briefing and argument today. The court will take this under advisement. The case is deemed submitted. The court's in recess.
Thank you.